Welcome back to Tech Hygiene. We help you stay sane in a crazy world. Say hi to your hosts, John Biggs and Lauren Feltman.
Welcome back to Tech Hygiene, the podcast designed to save your mind, save your brain. Is there a Pixies line that we could use there?
Oh, man. I don't know. we can go with save your soul.
Save your soul. Yeah, that's like the, what's her name? Was that? That was...
I think Blues Traveler.
Well, there was also the woman who sang it. Was that Sheryl Crow or the other one?
I think Sheryl Crow.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, we're going to save your soul. Yeah. Welcome back, Lauren. How was your turkey?
My turkey was nice. I had a very Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Very nice Thanksgiving. Very low key. Still in New York on Long Island. Just me, the sister, family. Mom didn't come by. Just people in the house. And it was nice. We survived.
Yeah. It's wild. I usually have like 30 people come to my house for Thanksgiving. I've probably actually invited you once or twice. I forget. But usually we have like a turducken and another turkey. Like I'll smoke a turducken and then we did like another turkey in the oven and enough stuffing to choke a horse and like 17 bottles of wine and all this other crazy stuff. And this year it was just, I made a turkey breast and a ham and then my mom was around. So I made her some, clams, fettuccine and clam sauce. And that was it. Basically that was it.
And you survived.
I did survive. I was a little sad. I mean, I like the camaraderie. It's one of my favorite holidays because I like to cook.
I did not know that about you.
Yeah, I love to cook.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, better safe than sorry.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Speaking of Salesforce is buying Slack. Do we have confirmation?
Yeah, I think they're going to announce it after the market's closed today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Slack is such a, Salesforce is an awful product and then Slack is not much better, I guess, in terms of user experience, in terms of use. I mean, I guess everybody loves it though. So.
Yeah. I mean, I've used Slack a little bit. Seems fine in terms of this sale and the quote unquote synergies, you can't really get more perfect than it. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense for both companies.
To a degree, but I would argue that something like Salesforce is a CRM. Salesforce is designed to like to make it easier for you to sell, I don't know, widgets on the internet. And Slack is designed to chat about it. It's not really like it's not a software product that really hits there.
But it helps though. Because now you can have all of your salesmen in one channel. I think it makes perfect sense.
All right.
I mean, I don't really care for either company. You know, I don't really care either way, but I think it makes perfect sense. Yeah. You have your staff and teams and salesmen or whatever all in Slack, and now it's just integrated into Salesforce.
Yes,
I'm fine with this one.
17 billion they would probably buy this thing for. 17 billion,
wow.
Or potentially. So the Slack has a market cap of 24 billion, which means, as far as anybody can tell, but it's I have Wall Street Journal saying it's 17 billion, and Forbes saying it's about 24 billion. So something in that range. But it's pretty good for Butterfield, the Stuart Butterfield, the kid who made that. If you remember that guy loved chat. He's been making chat clients since he was like in high school. So he loved IRC and all this other stuff. And then he just got, he did a couple other things before this. He did an online game that was supposed to be like Second Life or something like that. Or maybe he did do Second Life.
He did Flickr, right?
Yeah, he did. He did Slack. So he and Katarina Flake made Flickr.
Right.
Then they did a massively multiplayer game called Glitch, which was 2011. And the point was that when they built this game Glitch, they started using this chat program that they were calling Slack or whatever. So they built it. So they built the tool for themselves, and then they suddenly released it to the world. And in 2014, they had 16,000 users registered without advertising. So just people started using it. It was just a random thing. And now it's a freaking, now it's a juggernaut.
Well, people love to bullshit, I guess.
Yeah. His the guy's first name is Dharma Jeremy Butterfield. And he calls himself Stuart. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, God bless him.
Why not?
Yeah.
Moving more money around. And at least this one isn't completely nonsensical. I mean, I can see how it works, you know?
Yeah, it fits. Did you buy any Bitcoin? Have you purchased any Bitcoin?
I haven't. I've been trying to via PayPal, which is a big deal. I mean, PayPal allowing Bitcoin onto their platform is probably going to be the tipping point for all of this.
So I'm gonna confidently disagree. So the point, first off, PayPal using it is not really a thing. They're accepting it and they're allowing you to pay with it, but you really can't hold it in there in the same way that you can hold it in your own wallet. So putting your crypto into PayPal is the equivalent of, I don't know, dumping it into a sand pit. You don't know what's going to happen to it. It's kind of dangerous. So they mostly want it just to be an asset that you can trade as opposed to an asset that you hold. So you're not really supposed to hold you're not supposed to hold Bitcoin on PayPal. But I mean, think about it. If you get PayPal and I send you and you send me some PayPal, what am I going to do with it? I don't know. I mean, I'm going to send you back any if I get Bitcoin, I'm not going to send you back any Bitcoin. You don't care. You don't care how I send it to you, which way it comes. It doesn't really matter. Vast majority of people are just going to take dollars.
Yeah, but just the fact that PayPal's allowing it on any level seems like a sort of legitimizing big deal.
Well,
I guess. I mean, you're the Bitcoin expert, yeah. Way more than me.
No, it's not. So let me think about how to explain this. It's not that big a move for Bitcoin. So if I wanted to buy, so I can buy right now, if I want to, I can purchase almost anything I want with Bitcoin, potentially. There's you can get a credit card, you can do any number of things. If I have a Bitcoin account and I have it connected to the proper kind of exchange, I can technically go onto Amazon and purchase what I want. It's not the easiest thing to do by any stretch of the imagination. It's not the most fun, but it's there. It's available to me if I need it. Okay. So I'm going to go to PayPal, for example, and I want to buy a record on PayPal. Am I going to store my Bitcoin on PayPal and watch it fluctuate insanely? It can fall. It fell down to 16,000 a couple days ago, and it's back up to about 19,000. So if you want to freak out every single user of PayPal, you just give them crypto, because they're going to look at this and today the balance is going to be $300 and tomorrow the balance is going to be $150 and they're going to go nuts.
Right. Right.
So Robinhood, for example, sells crypto, that app, the stock trading app. So you can get crypto on there and it's fun to have, but it really doesn't do anything. You can't actually use it. It's locked down the system. So you can sell it within the system, but you can't send it to your friends or anything via the system. So it's kind of like having Bitcoin on there is equivalent of having, like, I don't know, the Thai baht. You don't really care as an American, nor do many Thai people care, because they're probably buying stuff from out of the country anyway. But it's a nice to have. But it definitely doesn't mean that, like, the Thai baht is a super cool currency, nor is Bitcoin a super cool currency because it's available on PayPal.
What's the benefit for PayPal? Why do you think they did it?
If they get enough float, first off, the fees are insane on PayPal. So buying and selling is completely ridiculous. You would never want to do it there. So they can get the fees. Plus, if they hold the float, if they hold the crypto, they can basically make money on the float of the amount of crypto that they have in their system, which gives them X percentage per month, depending on the volatility. So,
right.
so it's the equivalent of them, I don't know, investing in a penny stock, right? So who knows if it's going to go up or down, but if it goes up by a penny and they have enough of it, then they get $1 million. If it goes down by 2 pennies, they lose $2 million. But that's the price you pay. So it gives them the opportunity to really control an asset that's extremely volatile, and it's almost like it's the equivalent of that of Guggenheim or MicroStrategy or any of these guys investing in Bitcoin or putting their money into Bitcoin, because they know it'll go up or down, and if they have smart people, they'll be able to grab the ups as much as they want.
Right. How does this affect the famous Libra? Facebook Libra, as you know, is now called Diem.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge deal because they've changed the name to Diem. Now it has a new name, and it's Superior now.
I know the guy who runs all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, David Marcus.
Yeah.
David Marcus is an unbelievably bright guy.
Yeah.
Like, I was kind of shocked when he first joined Facebook. I know him for, a long time, mm-hmm. back to the Arrington days. He actually hired me to do puppet shows for him for his first company, Zong.
Oh, nice.
Which was then bought by PayPal. And he had an illustrious career, eventually becoming president of PayPal. Super bright guy, yeah. super bright guy. And I was kind of shocked when he took the gig at Facebook. I guess he was into the challenge. I mean, he's a very wealthy man in his own right before Facebook and all of this.
So
that whole deal is, I kind of like bet on him just because I know how smart he is. But
that's fine.
Is there any chance of it actually succeeding?
There's no chance. So what he has done is he's basically proved that a permissioned blockchain, a private blockchain, can exist in the corporate world. That's basically all he's done. What he's done is he's created he's the first guy on Wall Street to install a Linux server. Right. If you understand the intimation there. So it used to be, it was Windows NT. It was Windows, whatever, the network servers and everything was all Windows all up and down the stack. And
sure.
And he's the guy who comes in and says, you know what, we got to use this Linux thing so we can host our website on Apache. And everybody was like, no, you can't do that. It's crazy. It's going to explode. And he's going to prove it to everybody else that this thing exists. Maybe Facebook's going to have some cross-border transfer benefit from this, from Libra, but there's not much there. There's not really a thing that needs to exist. And the average human being, just like Bitcoin, you're never going to use it. You're never going to touch it. It's supposed to be pegged to the dollar, so why not just make everything look like a dollar anyway? Again, if you give this to grandma, or if I give it to a hobbyist on Etsy whose forte is blacksmithing, they don't give a shit about Bitcoin versus Libra versus Ethereum. They want to get their $500 so they can start on their the wagon wheel coffee table or whatever they're building that year.
Right. What is I mean, once again, what's the play for Facebook? I mean, just working the float? I mean, why does Facebook even need or want any of this?
If you think about it, why they want it is as I gave that example of the guy with the Thai bat. So there's a guy in Thailand wants to pay a guy in, I don't know, Brazil, and there's no sane way to transfer that money. And that's why it's taking so long for them to actually get this thing done, because if Facebook says, yeah, your grandma in Brazil can get money from you in Chicago, that's actually a massive change, because federal governments love to control their borders.
I know, but then how does grandma spend it?
She gets it in dollars. She gets it in reals or whatever.
Uh huh.
She gets it in her own currency. The transfer mechanism is the DM or the Libra or whatever is right. That token, but it's completely separate from her life outside of Facebook. She doesn't care how it gets to her. She doesn't care what the piping looks like. She just cares that it comes out the other end.
I don't really understand how all of this works. I don't trust it.
Yeah. Well, it's PayPal. It's feeless PayPal. If all goes according to plan, and it won't by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a feeless system for transferring cash. The incumbent is PayPal, right? For just a general idea, and then you also have Abra and these other services that are kind of associated with that. But if I'm a business and I want to get, and I want to send $5,000 to my friend in Madrid to buy some parts or something like that, to do that right now, I have to go to Chase. I have to ask me all these questions, all this other crap. If I did it over DM or Libra or whatever, it's going to go bingo bango. It's just going to happen.
I don't know. It's above my pay grade.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. It's,
I'm into gold.
Yeah, but it's the equivalent of gold. But instead of having to put gold in an envelope, you can basically just press a button. And again, that's right. It's extremely simplistic, and do I trust any of these things to be useful to the average human being? Probably not. I don't think.
That's the big if. Is it useful? Will trust. Trust first, and then is it useful to, you know, to the consumer? I mean, I don't even trust the companies who are building it all. I mean, I like David Marcus. David's a stand-up guy, but Chuck's not, you know.
But imagine the situation David's in. They say, hey, David, you're going to create a PayPal clone on crypto with some of the best and brightest minds in the world. He's going to love it. He's going to go in. He's going to go nuts. He's going to hire a bunch of PhDs. And he's going to have a little bit of fun, and he's going to pop out the other end. If he owns some of the tokens, he'll be a happy boy. If he doesn't own the tokens, it doesn't matter.
Right. No, he's definitely a guy who's up for a challenge, and he's a big thinker kind of guy. So I'm sure that was his motivation. So
I don't know. I was much more bullish on crypto a couple years ago because I did see here's what grandma needs to make her world a better place. But at this point in the game, it's just not there. There's no there.
It's still all just Silk Road stuff.
Not even Silk Road. It's just it even Silk Road was a pain in the ass to use because you had to go buy it. You had to figure out how to get to it. And they figured out all those people anyway, all those anonymized users, they all got arrested anyway. So it's completely silly. It's just really goofy. Right. Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens with it all. Did you see this Microsoft thing? Microsoft Teams.
Yeah.
Speaking of Slack, their competitor, Microsoft Teams.
They're surveilling you? How does this work?
So apparently they've set up some kind of gamification. I love that word. Mm-hmm. Gamification within Microsoft Teams. That's basically like just seeing how much time you're spending on Teams, and I'm sure that they've got cookies all over the computer for everything else.
Yeah.
But basically they're just timing how long you're on team, and your, you know, team leader can now see how much time you're spending and et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense. Cause if you're a real jerk, it makes perfect sense to really add that to add that little piece of bullshit to your day.
Yeah, that, because that's exactly how you want to, you know, motivate and excite your employees, is by now spying on them in their own house again. But why not? I mean, I guess everybody else is. Is it really worse than your Alexa or something? You know,
yeah.
I think I'd prefer to have Microsoft spying on me than my Alexa.
Well, the thing is it's kind of like it's the sweatshop mentality. Like and arguably working from home is a difficult proposition. I've done it for 20 years, so I'm fairly familiar with it. But if you just started and you realize, oh, I can either go make a sandwich, or I can work, or I can go change my tires, or I can go work, or I can go to Walmart, or I could work. There are certain types of people. And I'm not saying that they're bad or good, but there's just certain types of people who don't want to sit there in front of the computer all day when they have the opportunity to walk outside. In an office, they're forced to interact. They're forced to exist in there. Whereas working at home, you're basically you don't know what you're going to do, right?
Well, people just hate their jobs, huh?
Yeah.
People just hate their jobs, and it appears you like your job. I definitely like my job. I'm like you. I've been working at home for many years and I enjoy it, and I'm super hyper productive even. But I can see where most people won't be. It's like our guest, Paul Booten, who we had a couple of weeks ago. You know, the number one thing is people being distracted at their house. I mean, they just can't sit there. And can you imagine, we're seeing it now a lot with students, I guess, who are in the same boat now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm living with, you know, I'm at my sister's at the time being. She's got an 18-year-old, Ethan. He's just started college. And it's all online.
Yep.
And, you know, in one way it sucks, but it, you know, in another way, it kind of separates men from boys. Like, you just have to do it. I mean,
yeah.
Americans have to find a way to focus on things, whether it's work or school or whatever. I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, I have empathy for these people, but on the other hand, it's like, just get your shit together and do what you need to do. I mean, you're sitting in your house.
Yeah.
It's not like some boss is screaming at you. If you need to go to the bathroom, you get to go to the bathroom and you don't have to get dressed up. I mean, there's a real lot of benefits to working at home. And I don't know, I guess it's just difficult for people to stay focused. I mean, that's what Paulie said is, you know, that's the number one thing. People just, they just can't stay focused. And frankly, I don't know, you know, I don't know if it's just the result of working from home or we're just demonstrating something that was already there and, you know, via working at home. It kind of reminds me of that story I remember of crazy Alec Baldwin wouldn't stop playing the game on the plane and he got into the whole big fight. I don't know if you remember this. Mm-mm. But Alec Baldwin was like thrown off a plane. Because he just wouldn't shut his phone off for a few hours. And it's like, it's the same kind of thing. It's just America's attention span is just gone for work, for school, you know, I mean.
Well, we're
that's what the famous Quibi, which, by the way, is officially out of business today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, officially gone. You know, that's what they were banking on. I mean, they spent $2 billion banking on it and, you know, their content was horrible, but their idea probably wasn't in terms of just short attention span theater, you know?
Yeah. I mean, no, it makes perfect sense. And we're in a, but I mean, you also have to, I'm thinking to myself, like, does this happen elsewhere? And it doesn't really happen elsewhere because you do have a certain amount of, you do have a downtime portion in your life. If you're like in Italy or whatever.
Right, you take your siestas and
yeah,
you know, but they also have very different work weeks than we do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole different mindset. I mean, Americans are just so uniquely stupid, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, that's fine. That's a fair assessment, I would argue.
So I think that's really what it comes down to, is just Americans just you know, uniquely stupid, no attention span. I mean, look at, you know, just look at, I don't want to get into politics because we've been doing that a lot lately, but it's kind of the same thing. It's just tweet to tweet, you know? So I don't know. I guess I don't blame Microsoft Teams. I mean, I don't use it. I don't care, but it doesn't seem completely outlandish or crazy in general, you know.
But in order to ensure this proper tech hygiene, we were recommending people turn this off or try to avoid this as much as possible because it's completely
absolutely
nuts.
I'm a phone guy, and people hate it. People hate when I call them.
Yep.
And I don't care. I call them. Don't pick up. You know, I'll leave a message. Hey, it's Lauren checking in.
All right. If you want Lauren to call you, you want to give him a. Just text us. Just tweet your number at Lauren. We'll have him call you.
Remember when Scobel used to do that all the time? Tell people to call him. That was Scobel's big thing. My telephone number's right on my website. Why don't you just give me a call?
I mean, to a degree, it's fine because nobody ever does call you. So who cares?
My telephone number's on my business website. Yeah. I never get a phone call ever.
Yeah, exactly. Who calls anymore?
Nope.
This has been Tech Hygiene. I'm John Biggs, and I'm very excited to have with me Lauren Feldman. We will see you next week, right, Lauren?
Yep. Everyone, hope you had a nice Thanksgiving, and hang in there.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Tech Hygiene is brought to you by Typewriter.
Typewriter is your on-demand editor, and their amazing team of writers will make your book chapter, blog post, or email shine. Typewriter editors come from places like TechCrunch, Gizmodo, and the New York Times, and they offer low bulk rates for longer work. Check it out at typewriter.plus. That's typewriter.plus.